All right, whenever you're ready.
Okay, welcome everyone. I am calling to order the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission public hearing at 5:02 p.m. on February 16th, 2023. This is the February 2023 hearing of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission. My name is Mark Kiefer. I am the chairman, and I am joined by our fellow commissioners, Arian Allen, the vice chair of the commission, Annette Given, and Alice Richmond. If there are any other commissioners who have just joined in the last moment, please let us know. Today, the commission will be holding a public hearing to review applications in accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts executive order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, including the July 16th, 2022 amendment, extending those provisions until March 31st, 2023. We're conducting this meeting online, which is to say over Zoom, to ensure public access to the deliberations of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission. The public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing, again, or Zoom. This hearing is being recorded, so all further conversations between commissioners should be audible to the public in attendance until the hearing is adjourned. At this point, we'd like to acknowledge any media or elected officials currently present. Anyone, media or elected officials here? Okay, well, again, if you do join, I see Ralph Jackson. Commissioner Jackson has joined the meeting as well.
And I do not see any anyone from the Beacon Hill Times just yet. So,
okay. Members of the public will have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. So to do so, you want to just raise your hand as it were in the Zoom. Nick will have some handy instructions as how to do that if you've not done it before, but basically there we are at the bottom of the screen, there's a little button and you can push the button and raise your hand. Do that in the Zoom, not just physically, because we need to know that you are looking to make a comment. Again, we'll let you know during the adjudication of each application when it's time to take public comment, and you can do so then. If you do want to be heard on the record, you do need to make a comment at that point, not just in the chat, but audibly. You don't have to have your camera on, but you do need to read it or speak it into the record. And again, Nick will acknowledge you when the time comes. If you have any trouble with the technology, getting this to work, you can message Nick in the chat, in your Zoom chat, and he will sort that for you. And again, we'll repeat those instructions from time to time as needed. If you have any questions, again, just message Nick in the chat. Okay, so again, let the record reflect that Commissioner Jackson has joined the hearing, and now we'll begin with the design review portion of the agenda. The first item on the agenda is 15 Revere Street. Is there a representative from 15 Revere here tonight?
Yes, my name is Jeff Rand. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead. Do you want to tell us what you want to do?
I want to replace the glass in the storefront at 15 Revere. It's a corner building. Oh, you can see it. You can see a picture. And we want to use thermopane glass, clear, non-reflective, with no coating on it. We're going to use black spacers, and we're going to use the existing trim.
Okay, so these are basically just single, large, they're double pane, but they're just large portion, panes of glass. There's no muntin bars or anything, except for the, pieces of trim in between the windows. I think I understood this from the application, but for the benefit of our fellow commissioners and the public, Jeff, can you explain, since the glass is going to be thicker with the addition of a second pane of glass, where does the glass, the outside pane of glass sit relative to where the window is today? In other words, is it in the same position with respect to all the moldings and so forth?
So the outside part of the thermopane will be where the single pane is now. Does that make sense?
Yes. So all of the additional thickness is taken up on the inside.
On the inside, and it'll be supported or held in place by a wooden molding.
Okay, does that change at all in size or shape compared to what you got now?
change what in
the sort of interior moldings and so forth. I realize that's on the inside, but of course you'll see them from the outside.
Yeah, I had planned on using whatever, you know, copy or use what's there so that you wouldn't really notice it.
And again, there'll be, of course, a space in between the two panes, and that's going to be a dark spacer bar and gasket.
Yeah, my contractor is telling me that we can use the trims that are there. Is that what you're asking?
The trim. Oh, I see. So you'll just see, it'll just reveal what's actually already there.
I was saying that my contractor says that we can use the same trim and the same corners that are in place now.
Oh, the trim, right. Okay. But the spacer in between, what you see in between the panes of glass will be dark.
Black.
Black, right.
Will you accept another color like bronze?
How dark would that be? And the idea is we want basically the, as much as possible, the illusion that there's only one pane of glass to be maintained.
Yeah.
And so that it doesn't draw any attention to itself. Well, Nick, did you have any, where did you wind up on this?
So in terms of recommendations?
Yeah, or just in terms of like, I think it sounds like you had a conversation with the applicant earlier about this.
Right, that we talked about the spacer bar in between the two panes of glass being a dark color, preferably black, or I suppose bronze would be very similar, but it would be the preference of staff to have black.
Yeah, I mean, given that if we go back to the photo of the street view for a moment, it looks like it's dark green, not black, but. And actually, can you zoom in on that, Nick? Is that or Jeff? Can you tell us the trim around the windows? Is that this dark green color as well, or is that black?
Yeah, the trim is green.
Right.
But I can get black and I can get bronze.
Okay, so it sounds like. Let me open it up. Any other commissioners have questions? Clarifying questions on what's intended here.
So concerns? The glass that's there was not there when the storefront was originally there, or is that original?
Say that one more time.
The glass that's there right now, the single pane, is that the original glass?
I don't know. I would imagine it is. Maybe one or two of the pieces have been replaced over the years. But I'm guessing, you know, it doesn't have that old Ripley look of an old piece of glass from 1912. But I couldn't tell you.
So Nick, when you saw the glass,
I don't think it's original.
You don't think it's original?
No.
Okay. All right. That was my number one concern because you know we're losing bits and pieces of our neighborhood to new things. So it'd be nice to hold on to the old ones we can.
And plate glass that size is not all that old when you think about it. So it probably wouldn't have been. It'd be unlikely that it would be particularly historic. Okay, anything else before we open it up to public comment?
I'm sorry, what color is the trim?
It's green.
It's a green above, but is there, I'm having a little trouble seeing what the trim in the windows is.
Are you talking about the dividers or the trim that goes around the window horizontally and vertically?
I don't know what I'm wondering about the trim that sort of you see in the glass.
Yes, that's green.
That's green. And your intention is to do it again in green?
Yes.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you very much.
And Alice, just to clarify, it sounds like Jeff, you're just going to reuse the trim that's there.
Correct.
Yeah. So it will literally just stay as is. Yeah. Okay. Anything else from the commission? Okay. Why don't we open it up to public comment? Again, if you want to be heard on the record, please raise your hand as it were in the Zoom. The instructions are on the screen again, in case you have any trouble with that. If it doesn't work for some reason, just message Nick in the chat and he'll try to sort that for you.
Okay, first up we have is Rochelle. Rochelle, go ahead.
the Beacon Hill Civic Association, shop drawings are needed per guideline D12 in order to illustrate that all requirements have been met, such as guideline D6, which states that clear insulated glass may be permitted if the width of the replacement mutton matches the width of the historic mutton. It is unclear how the existing muttons will need to be altered to accommodate new double pane glass. The existing muttons should not be altered as they appear to be original to the building's 1911 construction and should be preserved. Attached to the end of this document is a copy of the historic permit as well as close-up photographs of the joint details for your reference. The glass must be non-reflective as per guideline D7. End of comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle. All right. I do not see any other public comment, so we can close public comment for this application.
Okay. Thank you, Rochelle. Okay. So to recap, let me ask, can we go back to the diagram for a second? Okay. So this is, obviously there's no dimensions on this, but you're representing that you're just going to reuse all of the existing trim. And so to the concern that was just raised or the comment that was just raised, Jeff, you're representing that ostensibly the muttons, not only is the width or thickness not going to change, but you are reusing what's the existing ones.
So the mutton is the vertical and the horizontal pieces, not the dividers, is that what you're saying?
Well, in this case, right, strictly speaking, I think there are no muttons on this window unless you count the entire storefront as one window. But I think, and Rochelle, just jump in if I mischaracterize anything you just said, but I think the concern is these vertical pieces in between the panels of glass.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
Yep.
So that's that you're just reusing what's there. You're not changing the profile at all or otherwise replacing them.
Right. Correct. Correct.
Okay. Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion? Okay. I'll make a motion that the application be approved with the following provisos, that the existing trim remain in its existing configuration such that the trim pieces between the windows are not altered in their exterior profile, that the windows use a black spacer in between the double panes of glass, that no low E glass is used, and that details are sufficient to affirm the exact dimensions of the windows and the preservation of the existing window trim be furnished to staff.
Second it.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? Okay, we'll vote Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Mr. Given.
Aye.
Mr. Jackson. Ralph, I think you're muted. Commissioner Jackson.
Sorry, aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Thanks, Ralph. And Commissioner Richmond.
Aye.
Okay, the motion is approved. Thanks very much, Jeff. You'll get a letter with all the details from Nick. If you have any other questions, just reach out to him. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Thank Jeff.
You. Okay, next on the agenda is are we going to hear these together, Nick, or as two separate applications?
They technically do have to be two separate applications, but as long as you make two motions, I think that's fine.
Okay. So next on the agenda is 60 Mount Vernon Street. And I think, according to the agenda, which is first, which part? Are we dealing with the
steps? Steps, yes.
Yes. Okay. Is the representative here from 60 Mount Vernon?
Yes, David Dankins, MF Reynolds, and representing the owner, Catherine O'Connell.
Hi, Dave, you want to tell us what you want to do for the, I know there's two pieces of this, but let's take the step portion first.
Sure. Nick, could you pull up first the existing photo? That photo shows, it's kind of difficult to see here. I don't know if there's a second one we sent along, Nick. I think that one's for the windows, that's why.
I'll bring it up on Google Street View.
Okay.
You see that?
That is it. Excellent, Nick. So if you can zoom in just a bit, the Swan Stables made up of 50, 56, and 60 Mount Vernon Street have similar but different characteristics. The other two properties have an intermediate step which aids access into the building. And here at 60 Mount Vernon Street, there is no such step projecting slightly forward of the threshold stone. And the our proposal requests the addition of a step similar to the two other properties that will have an easier access condition for the owner. So we can see here at 56 and at 50, this is both flanking the ramp doors down to what was access to Chestnut Street back in the day. Stones similar to the ones we see on the flanking properties. The stone will have characteristics as close as possible to the original stone, thought to be either granite or Rockport, Quincy or Rockport granite. And we mentioned in the proposal that we've had success in sourcing stone in Chelmsford, which has some stone, which is very, very close, which we've used on previous projects on Mount Vernon Street. And you can see the proposed elevation of the stone would be from 0 to 5 inches. We would have it obviously in a level condition.
Okay, so it's ostensibly flush with the street on the uphill side and 5 inches tall on the right.
Yeah, flush with the sidewalk, yes.
Mark. The sidewalk, sorry, yes. Okay, and how far sort of proud of the facade? 13 inches, is that what I'm reading?
That is correct, right, 13 inches. They range a little bit on the street from 12 to 14. Ours is projected to be 13.
Okay, and just for our own edification, forgive me if either you or Nick said this already, do you know about the ones on either side? So both properties on either side of you have a step, right? There's one of them. So the building to the, do we know, oh, let's take, yeah, do we know how far out these are? They look about the same, but.
Yeah, the 62, I think, is a little further. I want to say it's a strong 14 inches, if I remember correctly, when we measured it. They range because in some cases they're longer than the actual tread width moving up into the stairs. They tend to have odd dimensions, the ones I've measured.
Right, yeah. Okay, because there's, as you would imagine, of course, whenever you're adding something in this, that's technically in the sidewalk, there's a concern about, you know, obstructing the path of travel and so forth. And so I wanted to establish, you know, to what extent that such a path is already obstructed on either side of the building. But in any case, it's only 13 inches out into the, into the sidewalk. Okay. And this illustrates actually kind of what you're proposing as well, right? Where it's obviously it's level, but it's ostensibly flush with the sidewalk on the one
correct.
Side.
Yeah. Correct. Right. To deal with the grade at that point, it's 0 to 5 inches is the highest point will be 5 inches on the right side, as shown in this little sketch.
And what about the brick on the sidewalk? It's actually technically out of our jurisdiction, but the what do you propose to do to address the fact that you're on the sidewalk there?
The brickwork has been affected And see if the other, you had the other view before, Nick.
Yep.
Shows a little perfect. Excellent. This brickwork, we are going to have to remove approximately 24 inches of brickwork in front of the existing entry stone and to create a level surface. Part of this brickwork has been affected by tree roots coming from the tree in the sidewalk and pushing up against the building. What we see is the rising up of the root system up against the building. That's what's causing that wave pattern, if you will. We would slightly grind down the roots below the sidewalk, the City Hall pavers, place the stone, and then refit the existing brick.
Okay, and when you say refit, so what's going to happen around the stone that you put in there? In other words, I can't imagine that they're just going to line up, right?
Right. They'll be cut to fit. So it's a running bond, and what we would do is we would cut the stones to have them fit up against the stone in a fashion similar to the aspect of the sidewalk that's presently there. So again, okay. Ultimately we'd end up removing a few bricks. There's going to be a certain, you know, whatever the surface of the 70 by 13 inches is, that amount of brick will go out. And then the stone would be placed, and then other stones would be bricks would be cut and fitted into the new stone.
Okay, and then one last question, and I think it's actually maybe the concern is illustrated by this view. I can't tell looking from the picture where that pre-pit ends. It's quite large, obviously, because the tree is quite large. Can you tell us, at least with respect to the sidewalk immediately in front of the doorway, how much width are we going to be left with on the sidewalk?
The reduction is going to be 13 inches. And the overall at that point is, I believe, a strong 8 feet. I would have to measure it, Mark, but it's pretty significant. The sidewalk's reasonably wide at that point.
Okay, does that tree pit that we're looking at, you see the dirt there? Does that continue in front of your doorway, or does it stop about where? Oh, that's a better view, I think.
It continues down towards the doorway, right about where the Google Maps cursor is, or if you were to come in.
Oh, there we go.
Perfect, Nick. There it is. So you can see we're just beyond the doorway.
Okay, so from the dirt to your new step, how much is that?
It's going to be roughly 7 feet. Roughly.
Okay. So you're okay. Cause you know, of course we got a ADA requirement of 36 minimum path of travel that we need to maintain and so forth.
Absolutely.
Okay. It's funny. It doesn't quite look like 7 feet, but I believe the sidewalk is quite wide there. Yeah. Okay. And the intention you stated earlier, well, you didn't quite say this, but I'm understanding the intention is to match the stone as closely as possible, the stone that's correct. There already.
Yeah. Correct. In terms of the grain pattern. So we've had experience in trying to source stone that is as close as possible to Quincy and Rockport. And in the past, we have submitted the stone sample as it would be available in the quarry for review by staff prior to actually shaping the stone.
Right. Okay. Any questions from the commission?
Yeah. This is Alice. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. Did Nick opine yet on to whether he thinks this is a good idea?
I do think that this is a good idea in terms of access for this property. It will be cutting down the path of travel for the sidewalk, but ultimately, I think this is something that is supported by staff.
Okay, thank you, Nick.
Yep. It cuts it down no more than its neighbors.
Right. Well, Ralph, the neighbors don't have a large tree pit in front of it, though, which gives it a little bit more turn radius in terms of wheelchairs. But, yeah.
Well, it looks like there's a tree further along that might compromise. Anyhow, I think we agree that the width is acceptable. Width of travel is acceptable.
Yeah, and just so that it's clear on the record, the reason for doing this for the entranceway is what? I know that the applicant said it at the beginning, but I think it would be useful to just say it again.
Yeah, it's to ease the entry in off of the sidewalk with a first step slightly lower than where the riser height is at present. So the riser height there is just over 7 inches. And when we're done, we would have a riser height of approximately 6 inches, 5.5 inches. So it's an ease of access for the owner.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anyone else before we take public comment? Okay, why don't we do that? Again, if you want to be heard on the record, please raise your hand in the Zoom according to Nick's handy instructions, and he will acknowledge you.
Okay, first up we have is Rochelle. Rochelle, go ahead.
Beacon Hill Civic Association. We oppose the addition of the granite step as there is no evidence of it being an original feature. The protrusion into the walkway introduces a hazard which did not exist before, and the height of the existing step is not above a standard stair rise to warrant an additional step. For this application, we reference the following district guidelines. A3, for introductory guidelines, replacement of missing architectural features shall be based on evidence of original features substantiated by physical or pictorial information. Proposals for new work shall be based on evidence of appropriate detail with regard to size, shape, material, and design. End of comment.
Great. Thank you, Rochelle. I'm not seeing any other public comments, so we can close that portion of this application.
Okay, thank you, Rochelle. Okay, would anyone like to make a motion?
Well, the Civic Association made a great point. So is there any evidence that this is something that was there originally? And this is just, like if he's just replacing what was there originally, that's one thing. If this just been a modern day addition, that's something different, isn't it?
Well, I would, well, sorry, let me, I didn't mean to interrupt. Dave, to the question that Commissioner Allen has asked in the first instance, is there evidence that such a step, to use her words, was there originally?
We have not been able to find a source on that, Mark. There is information regarding the buildings from earlier documentation, but we cannot find anything specifically on that stone. There's a photo. I don't know if that can be brought up any further, Nick. I could not locate one, Mark.
Right. Now, of course, to generalize what Commissioner Allen is asking about, and not to speak for her, but you know, in general, of course, we don't necessarily the architectural history of these buildings. Is often, and I would dare say most often, quite varied. It's the exception rather than the rule that buildings remain in their completely original state. They're modified over time for all kinds of reasons, not least of which being changing tastes and so forth. And so often what we see even in the oldest buildings in the district is facades or features that have been modified from time to time over the years. Some of which, of course, some of these modifications were done are quite ancient, relatively early in the life of the building or otherwise just a long time ago. And so, you know, it's not a requirement that something had to be original, but we're certainly interested in the notion of did this feature exist on the building at some time? So certainly we've approved restorations of features that have been carefully documented. You know, that existed on the building some time ago, but were there for a long time in its history. I think this particular circumstance maybe is a little different in that if there's anything that's probably been modified the most and the most to adapt to modern necessity or convenience or technology. It's the front entrance. Obviously, all of these buildings, by and large, have doorbells. Most of them have some kind of exterior electric lighting, neither of which, of course, would have been, at least in their modern variants, original or even ancient features on these buildings. I don't know, to what extent steps are more analogous to external light fixtures, in that perhaps they've been around for a long time, but are not original, and maybe some of which are not old. I do know that the commission, however, has on a number of occasions approved other appurtenances that are designed as accessibility aids, most notably handrails. So there are many buildings in the district that have handrails that did not originally, or do not for most of their life, have handrails. And so to my mind, I think I would put this in that category. It's not a light fixture per se. It's not a modern technology per se, but it is an otherwise relatively innocuous aid to accessibility that can be made in a manner that's in keeping otherwise with the architectural history and of the building and our guidelines generally with respect to materials and quality of workmanship and so forth. And so I think
Mr. Chair, I would agree with all of that. And I would just say in response, that was why I asked the questions I asked about the reason for the additional step. And I was very concerned and was glad to hear from Commissioner Jackson that he felt as an architect that there was sufficient maneuvering room on that sidewalk for a wheelchair. And so the thing that sort of impressed me in the presentation was the evident care that was being taken to try to make the step look as quote unquote as original as possible in terms of where the stone was going to come from, etc. As you know, I have before said that things that have to do, you know, with safety are things which I support. And I think that this particular applicant has made a good case for the safety issue, and the fact that it's supported by staff, I think, is very important to me.
I agree that it was a good faith effort. When one looks at the early photographs, it seems as if the housing next to the build housing next to it was simply more refined from the beginning. So that it had those kind of appurtenances.
Yeah, I think to Ralph's point, it's also worth noting, particularly, and thank you, Rochelle, the Civic Association, for supplying this earlier photograph of the building, which is very helpful. On the one hand, these buildings are, it would be hard to understate the importance of these buildings. They are a rare surviving example of what was an original stable for three Charles Bulfinch designed townhouses for the daughters of one of the original Mount Vernon proprietors. And it's only, of course, because of this deed restriction in the property that they survive in their ostensibly original one-story configuration. And so I think certainly a stricter scrutiny and sensitivity is warranted in this case. But at the same time, as that photograph amply demonstrates, and as sort of the original intention of these buildings would make clear, these facades have been altered pretty radically over their now more than 200 years of life and so forth. And so we're certainly, I'm more comfortable, I'm also more comfortable allowing this addition, you know, given that we aren't looking at an otherwise pristine original that somehow miraculously survived unaltered in its original state, notwithstanding the fact that what remains is a quite, in my opinion, beautiful and refined a terrific example of this early 19th century architecture. So with that, I would make a motion that the application be approved with the proviso that a sample of the stone or as appropriate, the proposed step be supplied to staff in advance of any work and approved by staff.
Second.
I second it too. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? Okay, we will vote. Commissioner Allen?
Arian, are you?
Arian, sorry. Commissioner Allen, question? We're voting.
Yes, yeah, said nay.
Okay, Commissioner Given?
Aye.
Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Richmond?
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries and the application is approved. Dave, thanks very much for your attention to this, and you'll get a letter from Nick.
Thank you.
And are you going to stay on for the next application, which is also 60 Mount Vernon?
I shall be doing the presentation as well for part two, yes.
Okay, so this is the next application on the agenda, which is also separately, but also for 60 Mount Vernon. Please go ahead. Tell us what you want to do, Dave.
You bet. Nick, if you could bring up the same photos again, that'd be very helpful. So the three buildings have similar details, not all consistent. In particular, the fenestration, we have windows, which are divided light windows. I believe that these particular units date from the mid 1940s to the best of the record. And Nick, you can correct me on that if I'm off.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. In the construction detailing, methods of joinery, counterweight balance, system, pulleys change, all indicative of the period. The windows in this Federalist Revival sort of detail set, if you will, would typically have had shutters. And the shutters, we have no shutters on the building at present. The two flanking, or the two sister properties have shutters, which are solid panel shutters, style and rail with a center check rail, which is essentially on the check rail of the windows. So again, customized shutters for the individual windows. Windows on the other two units have a round transom detail, making for slightly shorter overall dimensions. They have a solid panel with a cutout. The proposed shutters for 60 Mount Vernon Street, shown in the sketch, are in similar fashion to the other two properties, namely solid panel shutters, traditional style and rail, and traditional hardware is proposed. These would be made of Spanish cedar, painted black, and two half shutters. The other windows have quarter shutters, as it turns out. They're fold back style shutters. We propose these shutters to each of the three windows and to be sized appropriately. We would propose to use the millwork shop, Beach River Mill, Ossipee, New Hampshire, to fabricate and to install the shutters. Again, Beach River Mill has experience on Beacon Hill with shutters and with the appropriate details. And the concept being to add the details similar to what we find on the other two properties to this property for its facade.
Okay, is that old picture, Nick, showing the original shutters?
So it's showing shutters on this property, but if you took a look at my notes, this property's facades, as you can see here in this image, has been rebuilt several times. So first in this kind of artist loft type style, and then it was reconstructed to kind of what the thoughts are, what they thought it would look like under a federal style, but there are no records to reflect exactly what that original style looked like. So there's really no understanding that what that style was. But this does reflect these images that were supplied by the Civic Association. And thanks to Rochelle and Diana for giving us these. It does show that there are shutters in at least one of the windows on this property. So.
And can I ask, I think you mentioned it earlier, Dave and or Nick, but we believe, so this photo is 1907, and we believe the facade's current configuration dates to the mid-1940s. Was that right? Did I have that right?
Nick, I'm going to let you answer that question.
I mean, we don't have an you know, we have this photo, which I have a photo with a horse and carriage in front of this property, and it looked like it was late 1890s. This photo says 1907. It's possible that it could be 1940s or maybe sometime in between 1907 and 1940. But it sounds about right.
Okay. So, and just to be clear again, so, as we can see from this photo and just comparing it to what's there now, this facade has been pretty radically altered over the years. And I think it's probably safe to say neither this nor what's there now reflect its original condition, configuration, which again, being a stable associated with, I guess it's 17 Chestnut Street, which I would understand is dates from 1806. While the townhouse to which this stable would have been associated, of course, was a high federal style building, we don't know, it sounds like, if this ever originally even had federal period features to begin with. That building, for what it's worth, of course, 17 Chestnut does have shutters on it now, very likely did not have shutters when it was constructed originally. You can tell because they're quite awkward. On the ground floor on the first floor facade because of those arched window openings that they cover. But anyway, so we think anyway that the facade that's there now, the shutterless facade, which is not this facade, obviously, it's been pretty significantly altered, you know, maybe as much as 80 years old, maybe more. Now, the other question I had, irrespective of that, photographic history, is there any evidence on the building itself that remains? Typically, and this David, as you can imagine, this issue has come up not infrequently from time to time, because while many of the buildings, most of the buildings on Beacon Hill, at least in the South Slope, have shutters, again, they weren't original features to very early federal period buildings. A lot of them were installed as sort of a patriotic gesture during the centennial in the 1870s. But lots of them have them. There have been a number of applications asking to put them on or to restore them. And so we typically will always look for direct evidence on the building itself. Are there shutter dogs, pintles, and so forth that remain even in the absence of shutters? So is there any existing hardware that's still on the building?
Mark, I cannot identify any existing shutter hardware or ghosting of that right. Hardware. We looked for pintles, we looked for dogs, we looked for holes where the where the holdback would be in a very typical application. It can't be easily identified. In a similar fashion, as I say, we look for those traces in the buildings as well. We were not able to identify them.
Right. Okay. My concern at a high level is always that we want to try to avoid a historical anachronism, for lack of a better term, sort of unwittingly representing that something is part of the history, perhaps the long history of the building, when in fact it wasn't, that something was always there or was there for a long time. that in fact never previously existed on the building. And it's a bit of a complicated story here because we've got direct evidence of shutters, but only on an earlier, quite different and much more ancient version of the facade. Any further questions from the commission on this? Okay, in that case, why don't we open it up to public comment? Again, if you want to be heard on the record, please raise your hand in the Zoom according to Nick's handy instructions. Commissioner Richmond, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was on mute and having trouble getting off of it.
No worries.
Can I just ask again as to the staff recommendation for this?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Alice. So considering that there was evidence at one point that a different facade, though the same building, the facade was rebuilt, and that seeing that the surrounding buildings have shutters, that staff would recommend approval, but with louvered shutters rather than the solid shutters to match the federal aesthetic.
And Nick, you feel that aside from the fact that the owner would like to do that, which of course is why we're here, but you feel like that's appropriate for that particular run of building there to put the shutters up?
Yeah, so this is a challenging conversation, right, Alice? So there's no black and white answer here because on one hand, this is north-facing windows on a stable. And with federal vernacular architecture, it would have been very, very minimal, minimally decorated or anything like this. So would there be a need for north-facing shutters where shutters are designed to kind of block out the sun, but allowing for air circulation during some of the warmer months in the year? But ultimately, when it comes down to it, there were shutters in a recent version that we see. There are shutters that are up and down the north side of the street, federal style architecture did often have shutters. So, I mean, I would certainly support it, considering it's not an original facade. So,
okay, thank you, Nick.
Thanks. And sorry, Rochelle, are we ready for public comment?
Yes, Mark? Please.
Okay.
Yes.
Rochelle, go ahead.
Beacon Hill Civic Association. We neither support nor oppose the installation of shutters on this property, but offer the following commentary. Comments in favor. Evidence suggests that the facade of this building is mostly original. The Flemish bond brickwork matches that of 17 Chestnut and was used universally in New England in the early 19th century. With that, there is evidence that shutters existed on the windows in 1907. See photo at the end of this document, which is the one that was on the screen earlier. ISD records indicate that the new window openings on the right side of the door were permitted in 1945 with no mention of the removal of the brick facade. The door and the window to the left of the door retain their original appearance according to Macris. Comments opposed. The existing facade is important to the history of the 1930s, 40s historic preservation practice of reconstruction and should retain what was decided to be constructed then, unless there is evidence of shutters having featured or intended to have been included in the 1930s and 40s design. Photographs of the brick around windows and window trim included at the end of this document show no evidence of former insertion of propeller shutter dogs in the brick or pintles in the trim. However, holes could have been infilled. Shutter style, if allowed, the building has a very different style facade than 50 and 56 Mount Vernon. If shutters are allowed, they should not match the solid heart look of 50, 56, but instead be of the standard louvered style used throughout the neighborhood, and they should be operable with functional hardware and shutters one half the width of the window opening so that they fully enclose the windows when in use. For this application, we reference the following district guidelines. Owners contemplating changes to the exterior of any building visible from a public way within the historic Beacon Hill District should be aware that no alteration will be approved that is inappropriate to the historical character, architectural design, and materials of the building or its setting. Furthermore, changes over time to buildings are evidence of the history of individual buildings in the neighborhood. Some of these changes resulted in major modifications to the style and character of a building and shall be considered part of its historic integrity. Other changes, although not altering the dominant style of the building, may have acquired significance due to age, quality, and irreplaceability, and if so, shall be considered part of the historic fabric of the building. A4, per introductory guidelines, all architectural changes shall be appropriate either to the original style of the building if it has not been significantly altered, or to its altered style if it has been significantly altered to reflect characteristics of a later style. D9, per windows, sash, and shutters, windows shutters are not permitted on buildings on which they are inappropriate. Evidence of previous shutters is required. Where replacement shutters are installed, they shall be wood and match the height and one half the width of the window opening and replicate a traditional blind. Contemporary vinyl or metal shutters and clad shutters are prohibited. All shutters shall be properly secured with shutter hardware, including pintles and propeller shutter dogs. D12, per windows, sash, and shutters, shop drawings must be submitted illustrating all of the above requirements. End of comment.
Great. Thank you very much, Rochelle. Next up we have is Diana. Diana, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Diana Coldren. I live at 4 Charles River Square, and this is my comment as a resident. I think that the photo does show that there was shutters, and that photo is early 20th century. However, it's evident by the brick pattern. If you look between the first window and the door, you can see clearly the Flemish bond pattern. This pattern was used principally all throughout New England up until about 1830. So it would make sense that not only that the stable has Flemish bond when originally laid up, but so does the main house. If you look at 17 Chestnut, it also has Flemish bond all the way up. So I think right here, although the two windows are new to the right of the door, that this proves that that window is probably, that opening is probably original. If you also look at the photo just dimensionally, between the space between the window and the door, it kind of lines up with today's spacing. I mean, obviously it's difficult to, you know, get down to the exact measurement there, but I think that it's ample proof that that window opening is original. This particular property, unlike the other two Swan houses, stayed in the Swan family for over 120 years, which is pretty incredible, but also leads us to believe that there probably wasn't significant changes in the openings. ISD has no record of any change in the facade, whereas in other buildings on Beacon Hill, even as early as 1920, if buildings were taken down or facade changes, they were recorded at ISD. So I personally would recommend shutters. I think that although the two new windows were put in the 1940s, I could not find any proof of shutters or not shutters on those two windows. So I think that given that shutters should be allowed on this window, given the historical documentation, that we should also allow them on the two other windows. So that's my comment. Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much, Diana. Appreciate that. Mark, back to you. And just to notice, we're at the 3-minute mark of a 20-minute per application. So just so you know.
Okay. Could you just very quickly, Nick, bring up 17 Chestnut on the street view? Mm-hmm. I just want to illustrate a quick point here.
You bet.
So further to Diana's comments, and I think some of the others have been made, I mean, I think the original building to which this original stable would have been associated is kind of a clinic in how early federal period, early 19th century, that is to say, high federal style buildings often did not have shutters. And if you come up the street just a little bit, you can see there, just sort of how awkward the shutters are on the first two floors of this facade. They're not original features to this building. And I think it's very unlikely that they certainly would have been on the stable behind, particularly given that, as Diana pointed out, and as Rochelle pointed out, there you can see the Flemish bond as well, very much a characteristic of these, common characteristics of these early buildings. I think where I come down on this, just to sum up very quickly, is I think certainly there's evidence that shutters were a feature of the 1907 version of this building. What we don't have evidence for is to what extent they were a feature of a significant part of the life of this building. And it does seem that the implication being that since the 1940s, they've not been a feature of this building. And moreover, I think the facade that's reflected now very clearly reflects that 1940s renovation. This is Rochelle's point about preserving the important moments in the architectural history of the building. That 1907 view might have indeed been one of those important moments. It has the artist window installed there and so forth. And so it had a life that's very different perhaps from its current life. And the architectural vocabulary of that time reflected that life of the building. But I think since it sounds like at least the 1940s, it's had a different interpretation stylistically and architecturally. And there's no evidence that shutters were ever part of that now longstanding interpretation of the building, the one of the evidently at least three different architectural interpretations that the building has sort of worn over its now, 200 plus year life. And so again, I come back to my original notion. To me, approving shutters on this now significantly altered and now quite old current version of the facade would be a historical anachronism. It would be to suggest that somehow shutters were always a part of the architectural vocabulary of this building, when if anything, the evidence suggests that they were not. But anyone else, any other thoughts, comments, questions, concerns?
Well, this is, I don't know if I have anything further to add, but Mark, this is exactly what Nick said about the difficulty of it, because this one I think is one of those where, there's sort of an equipoise. The I don't disagree with what you said, but I also think that the comment that we heard before about the shutters on one window, et cetera. So I'm not gonna belabor this, but I think it's even by our standards, this is a tough call, I think.
Yeah, right. I don't know that there's a utterly unambiguous, obvious answer here.
Yeah, no.
I definitely support, Mark, what you were saying, because I have to agree with Alice that, yeah, it's up in the air, but, as with other times with this commission, the current commission, we've come across buildings which had their own life separate from their sister buildings. And it does make it unique that it's unique. They said, 120 years in the same family? That is astounding. Do we really want to erase that?
Well, Erin, you raise another important point here, I think. And I'm not, forgive me if this wasn't quite what you were intending, but the notion that the neighboring buildings had shutters, it's not uncommon for us to look to neighboring buildings as a clue for what might be appropriate for a particular building. And that's, I think, nowhere more generally appropriate, at least in the abstract, than when we know that the neighboring buildings were built at the same time, which is certainly the case here, and by the same architect and everything else. But this, I think this case is very different than what often motivates those kinds of comparisons. For example, if you have what appears to be, original ironwork on a fence detail, like some of the houses across the street might have from this location. And it's clear that in the subject property that's been lost, and there's evidence that there was a fence, but we don't know exactly what it looked like. The house is on Upper Hancock Street, another example of this. And you look to do something that is generally appropriate, informed by the best information that you have of what might have existed on the property. Mm. I think that's a better situation or case in which we would look to the neighboring properties as a guide for what might be stylistically appropriate. In this case, I think we have almost the opposite condition, where the one thing that is unambiguously clear is that architecturally speaking, these three buildings have had sort of lives of their own. that have, they've diverged pretty wildly in different directions over the years, some retaining more features that speak to how they might have originally looked than others, and some, you know, being more radically altered. And I think this one appears to be the one that's been the most altered of all. And so in this particular instance, I think the fact that the neighboring buildings indeed may have had, may have shutters, and indeed may have had them for the longest part of their architectural lives is not instructive, because the one thing we know about this, this building is it's had a life of its own.
But this building had shutter, had a shutter situation. Is that image to the left of the screen not a, isn't that a shuttered window?
Yeah, that's just a blow up of what you see in the bigger picture. My point, Ralph, is that yes, it had shutters, but it never had them, as, at least as far as we know, in its circa 1930s or 40s re-envisioning, which is what survives today. So we're not putting back something that was on the facade as it's now interpreted or as it now exists at any point in its life, you know, since then. It's not like it was, the facade was altered in the 30s or 40s. And then, you know, 20 years ago, the shutters came off and they're asking them to put them back on.
It looks as if all of in all of its iterations, it's never been as ambitious architecturally as its neighbor.
Yeah, right. You're right. Even in this sort of reimagined Federalist interpretation that we've now had for 80 or so years, it's certainly more restrained, more modest.
Yeah. Or. Less ambitious.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's a better way to put it. Right. Not a value judgment, just interpretation, right? Well, I mean, y'all, I think, know how I feel about this. I'm inclined to deny this, but does anyone else have a thought?
Are you making the proposal to deny it?
Okay, it sounds like we don't have any further. So in the interest of moving this forward, I would move that the application for the installation of shutters be denied in light of a lack of any direct evidence currently extant on the building that shutters were installed on the current facade, and in light of the historical evidence, notwithstanding that shutters once existed on the building, the lack of evidence that shutters ever existed on the facade as it is currently configured and has been configured since, we believe, at least the 1940s.
I second that motion.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? Okay, we will vote. Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Gibbon.
Aye.
Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Richmond?
Aye.
Okay, the motion carries. Dave, probably not the result you were hoping for, but you'll get a letter from Nick with the details.
And I would just say thank you for a very, very informative and thoughtful discussion.
Well, thank you for coming in and for your presentation. This was a tough one for sure, but we appreciate your patience.
Thank you very much to all of you.
Thanks. Okay, next is 19 Revere Street. Thanks for your patience. Is the applicant for 19 Revere here?
Yes, good evening. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, good evening. Thanks for coming. Do you want to tell us what you want to do?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Tim Casavan. I'm representing the Condo Association at 19 Revere. We're actually somewhat ironically immediately across from Jeff Rand's building. So a little funny that we're both here tonight. We are trying to replace our buzzer system. The building at 19 Revere has 10 units. Two of them are on Garden Street, but the core 8 units are straight up 2 to a floor, 4 floors on Revere Street. The buzzer system that's currently in place, I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly when it dates from, but it's been broken for a number of years. And essentially it's an old school wired buzzer system. And the wiring within the walls is so old and corroded that it doesn't work and it's not repairable. So we've been working with various contractors over the course of the last 18 months or so to try and find a solution that not only solves the security and safety issues of actually getting a buzzer in place, but also is hopefully aesthetically compatible with the neighborhood. And so the resulting system that I think we came up with the help of, you know, some back and forth with Nick, was to try and use the Miracom Slimline system, which is a very popular design around Beacon Hill. It's a telephone entry system where there's a landline connected to this box. And when a person comes up, they punch in the unit that they want to dial, and then that landline calls the person's cell phone. This system is actually not what you would consider like a new age system. It's not Wi-Fi based. It's nothing like those big iPads that you see stuck to doors around the neighborhood now. This is probably technology from the 90s, is my guess. So what we're planning to do is take this Miracom Slimline box. The standardized version is kind of what you'd see on the red. Actually, yeah, it's so right there at the top of that page. It's a silver encasing, and we're going to take basically the guts of that box, and we're going to modify the box so that it's both less deep, and we're going to replace the silver casing with a bronze casing to fit more with the aesthetic of the neighborhood. The box is going to be slotted in the same place that we currently have the existing dashboard there. And this example, so these are two examples of sort of the brass modification. I actually don't know the details of, you know, who produced these, but just walking around the neighborhood, I was able to identify two Miracom Slimline systems that have been given a brass modification. Ours is hopefully going to look pretty much like what you see at 95 Mount Vernon. It looks a lot like the off-the-shelf version of the box, but with obviously a brass finish. So that is pretty much the meat of what I have to share with you guys. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
All right, so is it gonna be flush or is it gonna be protruded?
It's gonna be flush. So we basically have two options, Arian. The first and the base case is the dimensions that you see on this page here, which is a 3-inch depth. And so those 3 inches can be receded into the wood. In order for us to do that, we'll have to remove about an inch on either side of wood. And so on the one hand, we lose an inch of wood on either side. The other option would be to leave that wood and have the Miracom Slimline system come about 3 inches off of the current wood. So that second option wouldn't be completely flush. It would still be, I think, short of the brick that you see, but it wouldn't be completely flush to the wood.
Tim, thank you. I have a question as well. You showed us two examples in your presentation, and you were saying you were hoping to get pretty close to, it looks like the one on the left, the keypad buttons are also a brass color, if not finish. Is that possible? The one on the right is not. And I think that it would be preferable to try to make it as much brass as possible.
Yeah. So my understanding, Mark, is that the buttons are going to be the silver that you see on the right. I can inquire with the company that's modifying the box to see if they can do brass buttons. But my base case expectation is that they're going to reuse the same buttons.
Okay. And the display, actually, if we can just hold on that for a second, Nick, this is a nice example. So the display, it's a small display, a couple lines of LCD or whatever. It lights up, but only, or does it light up? And if so, does it remain illuminated when you're not using it?
The display, kind of what you just described, if you press the buttons, it lights up. but once the display is inactive for a couple minutes, I don't know exactly the setting, but I think you can change it within the device. It will fade to that unlit setting like you see on 95 Mount Vernon.
Right. And then finally, just really quickly, there's a speaker below the keypad. And is it going to be just like perforations in the brass like you see there?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, any other questions, clarifying questions from the commission?
Just wondering, since you mentioned that the buttons might be silver like 45 Mount Vernon, but you're trying to aim for the one that's like 95 Mount Vernon, why not just get that same style so we don't have to ponder about the silver? Just make it all brass.
Yeah, I mean, so you can't buy that. What you see at 95 Mount Vernon, you can't buy that from the manufacturer. So I don't know where they got that. That's clearly a very old modification of the device. Our best, like what we're doing is buying the fully silver box, which is the only version that you can buy, and modifying it to be brass to the best of our ability. If we could just buy a brass version, we certainly would.
I'm guessing you may be able to find the individual buttons in brass to replace them. Even if the vendor doesn't sell them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I can certainly ask them about that, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be a great idea, Timothy, if you could.
I'm sorry, Aaron, could you say that again?
No, I was agreeing. I'll say that'd be a great idea if you could.
Yeah.
It must be doable.
And so if the reason I was asking about the speaker, what in the, under the word standard design on the right, what is that black dark square at the bottom, rectangle?
You know, to be honest with you, Mark, I'm not sure what that is.
Mark, I actually know what that is. So I actually have the same unit in my building. So if you were to have a key fob, that's where the key fob, you would scan the key fob to open the
building. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions before we take public comment on this? Okay, why don't we do that? Again, if you want to be heard on the record, please raise your hand in the Zoom. Nick will acknowledge you.
Okay, first up we have is Rochelle from the Civic Association.
We support the application with the following provisos. The new intercom maintains the existing width of the intercom opening and does not encroach dramatically into the surrounding panels vertically. The new intercom has a bronze base. See photographs at the end of the document that show a close-up of the current installation, including measurements of both the existing intercom opening and a standard Miracom slimline product installation at a nearby building for comparison that shows that the existing intercom and its opening is slightly more narrow and much shorter in height than the standard Miracom slimline product proposed as its replacement. For this application, we reference the following district guidelines: E7 per doors and entries. Intercom panels shall be contained if possible within the entryway of the building and preferably shall be flush mounted in the wood trim. Such panels shall have brass or bronze faces. End of comment.
Okay, thank you very much, Rochelle.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's no other public comment. Yep.
Okay, well, we have Rochelle. Can I just ask you if you wouldn't mind to clarify? If you have a further thought, you heard the applicant say that making it completely flush would require encroaching a little bit width-wise on the wood door surround. It sounds like you prefer they not do that, but he said they could keep it to the width of the existing panel by making it less than flush. Now, Rochelle, did I understand you to say that you thought there was a version of this that is thinner?
So we weren't talking about the depth. We were talking about the width and the height of the product.
Yes. My question is, are you saying that there is a version of it that is not as wide?
No, so their opening is like 5.5 inches wide. The product itself is 5.75.
Right.
And that's a tight squeeze right there. So I guess if it's a customizable panel, is it like you can make it a little smaller? I don't know, like all the wiring is jam-packed in there.
Right.
You said that there was a picture. Oh, I'm sorry. You said there was a picture from the Civic Association. Can you bring that picture up so everyone can
see? Yeah, that's exactly, Erin. Thank you. That's what I'm getting at, Rochelle. I thought you said you had found something that might make this even smaller.
No, we just were raising questions as to how the proposed product would fit when it's bigger than.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to be heard on this public comment? Okay.
Not seeing any, yep.
Thank you, Nick. So to my fellow commissioners, I think given we're dealing with an entry that appears to be number one, not especially old or original, and doesn't, you know, generally speaking, the side lights, if there ever were glass in there, are gone. It's not a particularly intricate or delicate surround that we're dealing with. I think my first inclination, I would probably be more comfortable if it was flush but wider, even if it takes up a little bit on either side, rather than stick out and fit in. But any other opinions on that?
I agree with that.
Is that Annette?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I like the flush and it's wider.
The flush just makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're not talking about, you know, kind of really altering the look of the entry by taking away some of that wood, and it doesn't sort of otherwise interrupt or compromise some kind of, you know, important architectural detail. Anyone else have a concern about that? So Tim, just to clarify, if you're able to take away a little wood on either side, you can basically make this completely flush.
That's right. Yeah, the design was created with the idea of flush being the goal. So that's why kind of the base case was to remove that wood, was to be flush. So that is, we have about 3 inches of room in there, and that's what this design on the page will look like.
Okay, and just for clarity's sake, is that what is proposed in the application, or is that specified?
That's what's proposed in the application.
Okay, so the default is it's flush mounted.
Yes, sir.
Okay, great, thank you. Okay, any other comments, questions, thoughts, concerns? Okay, in that case, I would vote that the application be approved as submitted, specifically such that the proposed buzzer box will have a brass cover, that the applicant will make best efforts to use brass or brass colored keys on the keypad, and that the device, when installed, will be flush with the door surround. And that and have no permanent illumination.
Second that.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? Okay, we will vote. Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Given.
Aye.
Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Richmond.
Aye.
Great, the motion carries. The application is approved. Thanks, Tim, for coming in. You'll get a letter from Nick with the details.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Okay, I think that concludes the design review portion of the hearing. So we'll move on to administrative review. Does anyone have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns about any of the items under administrative review? Nick, any commentary that you think would be helpful?
So just, you know, 50 Beacon Street, they're replacing a lot of windows. This is a historic window and door project. I was able to examine every single window, and they are not original. So if anyone was going to ask that, it's clear that they're not original. So.
Okay, and as you say, they're replacing some existing pattern and so forth.
Yes, okay. Correct. Yep.
And again, just for our mutual edification here, I see you've got some repointing, and you're gonna, as is your custom, you're gonna have them give you a sample, advance and so forth. Right. Yes. Great. Okay.
It's not a sample. We typically get the mortar mix, and they provide that to us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And it's just these. That's it. Okay. In that case, I would I move that the items under administrative review, applications under administrative review, be approved en masse.
Second
motion. Oh, you have to take public comment.
Oh, okay. Yep. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sounds like I get that wrong every other time.
That's okay.
I'll withdraw the motion. Forgive me to the public. Would anyone like to be heard on the administrative review items?
Going once. Doesn't look like anybody. Yep.
Going twice. Okay. I will renew my motion that applications listed under administrative review be approved en masse.
Second.
Okay, we will vote. Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Given.
Aye.
Mr. Jackson.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Richmond.
Aye.
Okay, the administrative applications under the administrative review section are approved. Okay. next, we have a ratification of the January 2023 and public school committee
1222
public subcommittee.
Yes.
I read that too fast. I thought it said school committee. Oh boy. Yes, ratification of the January and December hearing minutes. Anyone have any revisions or questions, concerns about either the minutes from the January 19 public hearing of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission or the December 12, 2022 public subcommittee minutes? Okay, would anyone like to make a motion to approve them? Okay, I'll make a motion that the public hearing minutes of the January 19, 2023 hearing of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission and the December 12, 2022 meeting of the public subcommittee of the Beacon Hill Architectural Commission be approved.
Second.
Okay, we will vote. Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Given. Is Annette still with us? Commissioner Given, you're on mute.
In mute.
I'm mute. Sorry. Aye.
Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Richmond.
Aye.
Okay, they're approved. Thank you. Nick, staff updates.
Yep, so two updates. I'm happy to announce that we have three new Beacon Hill commissioners as of today. So we have Curtis Kemeny, we have Sandy Steele, and Maurice Feingold of Feingold and Alexander. So they will be joining the commission likely at our March hearing. They just have to go through the conflict of interest training and then a quick tutorial from staff to welcome them on board. So we'll be, and then we'll also be distributing the 2023 handbooks when they join as well. So so we will welcome them. They just got sworn in this week and it's very exciting to welcome them on board. It's taken over a year, but we got it done. So that's right. The important part. And then the second thing is next week, it very well may be our last hearing virtually. So the executive order suspending the provisions of the open meeting law will be expiring on, Mark mentioned earlier, on March 31st. We're just waiting for the governor to potentially update open meeting law so that we can operate possibly with a hybrid meeting setup, but we don't know yet. So I apologize. As soon as we find out, we'll know, but it's really up to the governor. So we're just kind of waiting in place until we hear something. But we very well may need to go back to City Hall, fifth floor, in the Piemonte room in City Council chambers. We're hoping that it will be a hybrid model where the chair, vice chair, and one other person for a quorum will be in person, and then the rest can operate virtually, and then also have a virtual a public participation process to increase the amount of folks that are able to participate in this process. But again, we don't know any details because we simply don't have them, because the governor hasn't released any information. I can tell you that the city is working closely with the governor's office to come up with something, and we're optimistic that we will get a revised open meeting reg soon. But again, we don't have any information right now, but I just wanted to put everybody on alert in case that happens, but we'll let you know as soon as we find out.
Thanks, Nick. And thanks also for your efforts behind the scenes in terms of the new commissioners and so forth, and your department and colleagues and so forth. That's greatly appreciated. I know it's been a long road, but great that that's finally come to fruition. With respect to the potential that we might need to be back in person, at least in part, I realize it's probably somewhat complicated, but does the city or would the city have the technology to ostensibly replicate some of the features that we're able to get in the public meeting, like going out to Google Street View and Macris and things like that real time in the hearing?
Yes. So our office did use part of our budget earlier this year in purchasing equipment to do so. So we will have a projector. We hope to have multiple screens up where we can use Google Street View, show presentations, and if there is anybody participating virtually, be able to see a video of them. So we do have the equipment ready to go. It's just a matter of implementing it. So yes, we do have that stuff ready.
Okay, and just finally, one last question on that. Yeah. And with respect to sort of public participation, does that mean, for example, that people will be able to make comments on the record from remotely?
It is our intention that would be the case. We do accept public comment via email and written letter. So we would imagine that we will still allow all of those different avenues to be taken to submit public comment as well as in person. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we'll stand by and look forward to seeing how it plays out.
We'll see we'll see what goes on. So fingers crossed.
Right. Okay. With that, is that it, Nick, I think, on the agenda?
That's it. Yep.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Okay. I'll go ahead and second that. We'll vote Commissioner Allen.
Aye.
Commissioner Given.
Aye.
Commissioner Jackson.
Aye.
Commissioner Kiefer votes aye. Commissioner Richmond.
Aye.
Thank you all very much. And we will see you next month, if not sooner.
Great. See you later. Bye.
Good night, everybody. Bye.